We all know the world of energy and natural resources is changing fast. People are demanding action on the climate crisis. Businesses and politicians are throwing their weight behind the energy transition. And technology is reshaping the world as we know it. But we must ensure the result doesn't become too complex and too confusing. That's where the Climate Transition Podcast comes in. In this series, DLA Piper's Energy and Natural Resources team speaks to special guests to help you make sense of it all. My name is Natasha Luther-Jones. I'm the Global Co-Chair of the Energy and Natural Resources sector here at DLA Piper. I'm also co-head of our International Sustainability and ESG offering. And I am your host for the series. Today we ask, will the Nordics lead Europe on green hydrogen? Europe has made great strides in the last 12 months to establish itself as a hub for the emerging green hydrogen sector. The EU has finally defined what it means by green, and in November it launched the first auction from its European Hydrogen Bank with support of €800 million. The results are due this year, April. In addition, the EU has recently approved the use of green fuels in the transportation sector in Germany. But some parts of Europe are better suited than others to accommodate utility-scale green hydrogen production. And one of these regions is the Nordics, which benefits from large areas of renewables, ambitious utilities, and forward-thinking off-takers. In this episode, we want to drill down into the details. How far have Nordic nations got in their quest to be green hydrogen exporters? What are the obstacles they will need to overcome? And how can this benefit Europe as a whole? I won't be tackling these questions alone. I'm very pleased to be joined by Jens Woltzner, Deputy Head of Infrastructure at Prime Capital, which is developing green hydrogen and renewables in the Nordics and beyond. This includes a 200 megawatt Kristinestad hydrogen plant in Finland, where the final investment decision is due to be made this year. Hello, Jens. Thanks for joining me and welcome.
Hello, Natasha. Thank you for inviting me to this podcast.
Great. So let's get going by giving our listeners a little bit more information explaining what Prime Capital does.
Sure. Prime Capital is an alternative asset manager based in Frankfurt. Within our infrastructure franchise, we are dedicated to investing equity on behalf of institutional investors, mainly pension funds and insurance companies, into energy infrastructure projects. For more than 12 years, Prime Capital has invested about €5 billion into renewable energy projects, and with about 2.5 gigawatts of energy infrastructure projects, became one of the largest, if not the largest, renewable energy investor in the Nordics. We have focused on the Nordics as the region has been, and actually still is, one of the most advanced renewable markets globally, which allows for green power production at the lowest levelized cost of electricity in Europe due to its great wind and land resources. During the last 2 to 3 years, we have also focused on what we call energy transition projects, meaning the production of green hydrogen and other power-to-X derivative products like ammonia, e-methane or e-methanol.
Thanks, Jens. And what about you personally? How long have you worked in renewables?
Personally, I have been working on renewable projects for more than a decade by now.
Gosh, it seems longer, Jens, from your banking days, I remember, but maybe that's the COVID effect. What attracted you to renewables as an asset class then over those last 10 years?
Well, being able to play a part in reducing the carbon footprint of the energy sector fascinated me as it became clear that it will be an increasingly important goal. I really do like the idea of being able to take at least a small part in developing solutions, reducing carbon emissions and having an impact on the energy transition.
Me too. So I fully agree with that. And when did you start getting involved in green hydrogen then?
I began getting involved into the sector more heavily around 3 years ago. It's a short period. However, during that time, already the developments have been quite tremendous on the sector, and there is still a lot of development.
Okay, thanks very much. So look, let's look at the topic of this podcast now. We've had a bit of background from you and look at the Nordics and hydrogen in particular. When I introed you, I mentioned the Kristinestad project. Do you want to tell the listeners a little bit more about this and how and why you're involved?
Sure. The Kristinestad project is a Power-to-X project at an industrial scale, meaning that the plan is to build a 200 megawatt electrolyzer facility and combine it with about 500 megawatt onshore wind pipeline, which is also owned by us and our partner CPC Finland, which is a renewable energy developer. We believe that the combination of Power-to-X with own power production is an important element of a successful Power-to-X plant, given that this ensures cost certainty over the power on the power procurement, which accounts for more than 70% of the production costs of green hydrogen. This is the single most important cost factor. In addition, you asked how we got involved. Actually, we developed it from scratch, having identified a project site which we deemed to be highly beneficial for a Power-to-X project in light of its substantial grid access, water infrastructure, and the availability of land. Of course, besides the access to great wind resources.
Wow, from scratch, that is very impressive. So if we were to sort of say to other investors, what's so attractive? Presumably other investors wouldn't have to actually develop it from scratch. But if you look from an investor perspective, what is attractive about these green hydrogen projects in the Nordics?
I think, first of all, investments into green hydrogen and derivative projects are clearly needed in order to be able to achieve substantial decarbonization of industries and to preserve the chance to comply with climate goals. Secondly, the production of green hydrogen and its derivatives allows for the transportation of energy from one location to another without requiring the substantial investments otherwise needed into the corresponding grid infrastructure. And hence, they also offer the possibility to increase the energy independence of Europe. Clearly, those two goals are very important, also for the investor base we are talking to. And thirdly, and a very important point for an investor, it allows for an extension of the value chain and diversification of end products as well as end product markets. This being said, it is clear that green products are more expensive than their grey alternatives currently, and hence they do require some sort of financial support.
Yeah, it's a really good point you make at the end there, Jens, and it's something I would like to pick up later on in the podcast about the financial support. But sticking with the Nordics in particular, if we can, why is it that the Nordics are so well suited to hydrogen then?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, electricity costs are the most important cost factor for any green hydrogen production project. Onshore wind's levelized cost of electricity in the Nordics are among the lowest in Europe and hence very competitive. Besides, many parts of the Nordics are benefiting from a relatively high renewable energy share already today, which allows for certain regulatory relaxations in accordance with the European framework for renewable fuels of non-biological origin. Sorry for that word, but it's just the technical term.
We have to have some acronyms and technical terms on these podcasts.
Indeed.
So go ahead.
Yeah. So, for example, not requiring the procurement of power from new green renewable projects, like for our project in Finland, or even allowing the use of grid electricity are such kinds of regulatory relaxations. But it's not only about the region, actually. It's also about technology being used. Given that green hydrogen production requires a lot of electricity, a combination with offshore wind is often pursued. However, given that the levelized cost of electricity for onshore wind is roughly only half of the ones for offshore wind, and given that the Nordics provide for low onshore wind levelized cost of electricity compared to other regions, both factors make up for a strong competitive advantage if the end product is being produced by Nordic onshore wind.
That makes a lot of sense. Thanks, Jens. And looking at your Kristinestad project then specifically, clearly, as you've outlined, the massive issue is getting clean, affordable power. So how do you make sure that you get or you will get clean, affordable power for Kristinestad?
This is indeed a very important question and something we perceive a lot of green hydrogen projects like. With respect to our Kristinestad project, this is mainly ensured by the combination with the onshore wind pipeline, which we are developing in parallel to the Power-to-X project. On a yearly basis, the power production and consumption of both project parts match very well. However, regulatory specifications require monthly matching until 2030 and hourly matching thereafter. This also means that we are required to procure additional electricity from the market, but only to a very limited extent. Hence, we do not perceive this to be an issue for the project development.
That's great to hear. So it's all sorted. Thanks, Jens. Before we move off from regions and Nordics and Europe being powerhouses for hydrogen, I would like to touch on the US, which is often the case now when you're talking about renewables or green hydrogen, and the impact that the Inflation Reduction Act has had. Do you think it's had an impact or will have an impact on the hydrogen economy for Europe?
Of course, the US Inflation Reduction Act with around $370 billion being earmarked for energy security and climate change only is obviously a very mighty instrument for triggering investments in the US. In particular, if you see green hydrogen subsidies amounting to up to $3 per kilogram. We have clearly seen that Europe has been lagging behind in terms of both establishing a clear regulatory framework as well as providing substantial financial support. This being said, I believe that Europe has at least caught up in the meantime with respect to setting the regulatory framework. However, with about €72 billion of EU subsidies foreseen, these are being provided at a much lower scale. This also becomes quite clear when looking at the upcoming EU Hydrogen Bank pilot auction, which in general is a good instrument to provide support to European projects. But with an amount of just €800 million in total, it is far too small to serve the large amount of green hydrogen projects requiring support currently. There is more to come, but substantial support is required now for the sector to really be able to deliver in a timely manner. Support does not necessarily need to come from subsidies only, but can also come from incentives and or penalties being set for off-takers in the utilization of green products.
Well said. I totally agree. So we're aligned there, Jens. So why don't we look at, you've mentioned one of the challenges so far, which is access to accessible, low cost, green electricity. Do you want to talk anything more about any of the other challenges?
Sure, yes. I mean, what we perceive as being the two most crucial challenges for each green hydrogen or power to X project are securing sufficient clean electricity at affordable costs on the one hand side, and to find off-takers who are able and willing to pay an appropriate green premium for those products. Despite the green premium often having a limited impact on the end product of the off-taker of such energy, the off-takers still fear a first mover disadvantage, depending also on the price elasticity, obviously, of their end product buyers. This often requires a regulatory support, as mentioned before. This being said, in light of having secured low electricity costs, as well as an attractive off-take solution in the hard-to-abate transportation sector for our Kristinestad project, we are very confident of its realization.
That's good to hear. So the challenges then, as you see them, the main ones are twofold. It's the cost of the electricity, of the green electricity, and then it's the off-taker and the off-taker market. How does that if you want to tell our listeners a little bit more, because historically you've your investment strategy has been about renewables. So does that impact your green hydrogen investment strategy from renewables?
Well, there are two different types of assets creating very different products. Hence, it requires also to get used to totally different technologies and markets. while producing renewable power forms the basis of such new developments, the production of green energy opens up the possibility to tap into other offtake markets and to strongly diversify offtake solutions across different products and markets, as well as an increase in investor returns to compensate for the perceived higher risk. We want to enable our investors to benefit from such developments and do this by offering them a quite conservative strategy, meaning investing into grid-connected renewable projects, supporting the Power-to-X projects, which also serve as a safety net if the Power-to-X project is not realizable.
That makes sense. Thanks for that. For those that are new to that sort of green hydrogen sector, and I include me within this as well, actually, you know, we come from renewable energy background. We're used to who the off-takers of electricity are. So can you tell us a bit more about the biggest users of green hydrogen and what the off-take market looks like from that side of things?
Sure. I mean, so far, availability of green hydrogen is very limited, but grey hydrogen is being used frequently in different industries. And in respect of the usage of green hydrogen and other end products being produced out of green hydrogen, like e-ammonia, e-methane, e-methanol, or also e-sustainable aviation fuels, we believe they will be predominantly used in hard-to-abate sectors, such as the different transportation sectors, in particular heavy-duty truck transportation, the maritime industry, and aircrafts. Additionally, certain other industries like the chemical industry or fertilizer and green steel producers would require such products.
So it's fair to say that the market could be massive, given the sectors and subsectors that you've referred to, and could grow quite significantly. So if the off-taker market's there and could grow, and we expect it to grow, we think the renewable power is there and is expected to grow, the issue that we had in all our sectors as they grow is supply chain. And where do you think, the electrolyzer makers will grow fast enough to meet the demand?
Yeah, that has been a strongly debated issue in the past, and scarcity of electrolyzer production capacity is clearly an issue. But at the very end, it's a chicken and egg problem for manufacturers who must invest in larger production capacities on the one hand side, when it's still unknown to what extent all the announced projects in the Power-to-X market will be realized. The current realization quota in Europe is still very low, below 5%, due to the challenges mentioned before. However, what we see is that electrolyzer manufacturers carefully choose the projects they intend to support and reserve capacity for. This, from my perspective, is a sound development, and hence I believe that electrolyzer manufacturers will be able to adjust quickly enough.
Well, that's good to hear. So how important do you think then, we've heard the challenges and we've heard, but we've heard some quite positive comments coming from you, Jens. So how important do you think green hydrogen will be for the energy mix, say, looking forward? So where are we now? Maybe 2035.
Well, that is hard to say in exact figures, but it's clear that green hydrogen and its derivatives will become much, much more important, and have the potential to actually even revolutionize the energy sector. There are many industries which already have made investments supporting the decarbonization, like in ships or trucks running on advanced fuels, which will be required to be served.
And then how will that, where do you see the future of Prime Capital's asset mix over this period of time? How do you think it will change?
Of course, also the share in Power-to-X projects in our asset mix will grow over that period. However, in light of our rather conservative investment strategy, which I outlined before, we believe that Power-to-X projects will only account for around 20% of our assets we invest in the upcoming years.
Okay, so still heavily dominated by renewables, but a growing role. So that sounds positive, I think. So look, that does leave me to a question I like to wrap up these podcasts on, and I ask all our guests. I think I might have an idea of what you'll say as well, but let's see. Are you optimistic for the future, Jens?
Well, despite the very challenging geopolitical as well as macroeconomic situation, I'm optimistic for the future. given that the need for strong decarbonization efforts as well as ensuring energy independence has become clear to policymakers and society in Europe. Enabling investments now will also help to reduce production costs and allow for cost competitiveness with or without low regulatory support in the future.
So, in short, Jens, a thumbs up from you. I'm actually, now, if you could see me, yeah, so I'm virtually thumbs upping now anyway. So there we go. Look, thank you so much for your time, Jens. I've really enjoyed having you on this podcast.
Thank you very much, Natasha.
It's clear that there's a huge momentum in the green hydrogen industry. The Nordics are clearly playing a really important role in the rapid evolution of the market. But there's still big questions for investors that are planning to invest in this nascent sector. And you've heard some of the challenges here from Jens. It's not easy. They're not easy to answer, but it's been fascinating getting Prime's view on it. That just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening. You can find all of our previous episodes on Spotify, iTunes and the DLA Piper website. And we'll be back soon with some more.
Please subscribe to the series at dlapiper.com/ENR or via your usual podcast platform.